Such a massive place as the cosmos, we only have to look at ourselves for proof that extremely unlikely things can and do happen all the time. Let's just hope that if aliens do find us, they'll come in peace.
Hey, this is Brian Vander Ark, and you're listening to my music on WHFR Dearborn.
Views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded show do not necessarily represent those of WHFR or Henry Ford College. Good afternoon. This is WHFR Dearborn, and this show is called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. And this month, my special guest is Tim Woolworth. He is a lead investigator and case manager with Motor City Ghost Hunters. And in case you didn't know by the name of the group, we are going to be talking about ghost hunting on this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Tim, how are you today?
Quite well, Mike, and I'm glad to be here.
Well, great. I'm glad you're here as well. Now, how long have you been with Motor City Ghost Hunters?
Since 2012.
Mm-hmm. And have you done that previously?
I did. Prior to moving to Michigan, I was with another group in New York called the Central New York Ghost Hunters.
Mm-hmm. And what sparked your interest in ghost hunting?
Oh, it goes back quite a ways. When I was a kid, my mother was very devout and God was the most important thing in her life. And to be the best Christian she could, she would have all kinds of books regarding Satanism, demonology, witchcraft. So from a very young age, these things caught my eye, and I got my hands on everything that I could possibly read. When I became a teenager into a young adult, my formative years, I looked into witchcraft and Aleister Crowley, the Ordo Templi Orientalis, and everything I could get my hands on regarding that to see how everybody else in the world dealt with paranormal phenomena. And then the paranormal phenomena found me. I grew up in a house that had item translocation where I'd put something on a nightstand and it would be gone in the morning. You'd find it in the kitchen cupboard 3 weeks later. The house I grew up in, four generations of family had died in that house, and it went back to the 1860s. So It's a very old home, and eventually every place that I moved to had more and more phenomenon, and then in 2009 I sought out a group that could help me to quantify this particular phenomenon, and that's when I got into ghost hunting.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you started to notice things being moved, et cetera, did you try to communicate with any spirits at that point, or did you just think this is really strange and I don't understand it?
Actually, yeah, I did some communication. That comes from years and years of reading. The one solid thing that made me decide to seek out one of these groups is when I was in college. I was an English major, and I used to spend all of my time reading and reading and writing because I write a lot. And then I kind of pushed off my writing for a little while, and in the sunroom of my house, I had several bookcases four shelves high. And on one of the bookshelves, on the fourth shelf, was a book on writing by Dorothea Brandt. And I was in the kitchen on the other end of the house, and I hear it thump. I walk out to the sunroom, and I see this particular book lying in the center of the floor. And I was like, okay, I get your message. Everything's good. And I didn't pursue writing. A month later, I heard the same sound. It was the same book in the center of the floor. And that's when I realized that something from the other side was trying to make contact, and I needed to find a way to be able to contact them. And that's when I joined the ghost hunting group.
Mm-hmm. Well, since he kept picking that same book, did you eventually pick that up and read it as well, or just ignored that fact?
No, it's a book that I read again. It's actually an interesting book. She was very bootstrappy about writing, where you had to set a certain time every day and stick to it. Mm-hmm. And it's not a particular theory that I agree with, but it does help.
Right. Just doing something consecutively and consistently, and
yep,
you get it done. Well, I know other guests I've had on here, you know, they've been in situations where the same book will be falling down or falling at their feet, and they'll take it as a sign that, wow, I should pursue this or really, you know, study it a little bit more. You didn't feel like that necessarily?
Well, I did, as opposed to studying writing, because I was still a college student, so mm-hmm. that's what I was actively writing, just not creatively like I should have been. I decided to take the spiritual aspect of it and see if I could figure out what was trying to communicate with me and how I could communicate with them to see exactly what they were trying to tell me. Mm-hmm. And that's when I sought out the group in New York, and luckily I was mentored under a lady who had been in the field for over 20 years at that point and had been featured on several television shows and currently tours the country. Mm-hmm. And she taught me a lot.
Mm-hmm. She does speaking engagements?
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now, when you do this, do people just contact you, or do you hear about certain places and go to those places, or how does that operate on finding where the ghosts are?
Well, there's two different aspects to the Motor City Ghost Hunters. One, we are the residential cases that we go on. These are the people that are having activity in their homes, and it is frightening them. They can't understand what's going on, and they're looking for answers. Other residential cases, they have a good feeling of who is trying to communicate with them, whether it be a former family member, a former resident, or possibly something from the grounds where the home was built. And the other side of Motor City Ghost Hunters is where we deal with historical societies. We actively seek out historical societies to work with, whereas residential engagements seek us out.
Mm-hmm. Now, these societies, they have certain places that they want you to check out and explore?
Well, it's kind of a quid pro quo. When we go into a historical society, like we work with the one here in Dearborn, for example, at the mm-hmm. McFadden Ross House in the Commandant's Quarters, what we do is we go in and we investigate the place. We see what kind of evidence that we can obtain, whether we feel that there is something possibly on the grounds or not. And then we bring the evidence back to the historical society, give them a presentation. The goal behind this is if there is enough activity that we can host adult walks for these historical societies, in which all the proceeds go directly to the society. What we get out of it is carte blanche to investigate the place and go to areas that aren't open to the public. What the historical society gets out of it is one or two adult walks a year where they can raise thousands of dollars, because you know how budgets are these days.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, that's a plus. So when you take people on these tours, what do you show them, or what are you telling them?
We typically give a presentation showing the evidence that we got there before. We'll break them up into groups and we'll rotate around buildings. We bring the whole kit and caboodle when it comes to gear. We typically hand gear out to people, and we let them ghost hunt with us.
Mm-hmm. Is this very popular?
It's quite popular. We usually do a couple in the spring, and from September to October, we're booked nonstop doing these public hunts for historical societies and library presentations. Like Port Huron, for instance, on a typical public ghost hunt, we can bring in 30, 40 people.
Mm-hmm. That's a pretty good sized crowd. I mean, obviously you must break them up and take them in smaller groups.
Luckily, that's one of the areas where we have several buildings that we can work with. So, yeah, you're dealing with groups of 8 to 10 people.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's the most fascinating thing about ghost hunting to you?
To me, trying to find the answers, you know. Every one of us has pondered what is on the other side of the veil when we pass over. And I think every time that I go out and I receive affirmative responses, it demonstrates to me that there's a persistence of consciousness, whether that be a soul, whether that just be another dimension, or for all we know, it could just be projections of our own thoughts. Mm-hmm. These are all things that we're trying to explore, and I think with every case, we try to find out a little more.
Mm-hmm. Well, in your opinion, how do these spirits or ghosts get trapped in houses? How come they just can't leave when they want to?
Isn't that the golden question?
Yeah. You wish you had the answer, right?
Well, based off of years of experience, we are typically dealing with something that's called earthbound. If you've probably heard of earthbound spirits before, I assume.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay. So when you go into a home, you're dealing with primarily these earthbounds, and these are particular spirits or human beings that upon death, they didn't cross into the light. Mm-hmm. Crossing into the light is a universal experience regardless of your religion, your race, your creed, your beliefs. And for some people, they don't go into that light. A lot of the cases that we find, there are several reasons. One, they fear eternal judgment. There are a lot of religious people out there who fear judgment upon death. And every one of us is a sinner. So you see this giant light and you think, that's it. That's your God. That's whatever it is. And this is my final judgment. You avoid it. There are others who want to look after their family. There are others who want to look after their business. There are others who are waiting for people. And finally, there's just confusion. You're in a solid form, and then all of a sudden you're not. You can't interact with the world around you. And that can lead to a state where you're lost and you're scared and you're just trying to get in touch with those around you. And in a home, for example, it can be a former homeowner is quite frequent. And it can also be a family member. There are a lot of places that we go where they're crying, you know, they say, it's a demon, there's sounds, it's gotta be evil. 99% of the time it's grandpa just saying hi.
Mm-hmm. Right, they really aren't mean-spirited or anything that they're trying to cause harm. Like you said, maybe they just haven't gone or left. I know I went to your website and I saw a few different, you know, trips that you made out to different houses and stuff. And often the question was, do you want to go to the light? How come you don't want to go to the light? Just to, you know, find that out. And how do you piece these, like, one-word answers together? I mean, do they give you some type of enlightenment as far as why they don't want to go over or what the problem is?
Well, it's cumulative over time. And it's not just the one-word EVPs. It's also real-time responses reading through ghost boxes, through research devices like the Ovilus, or even, you know, going old school with knocks and raps and feelings. It's a cumulative thing that you start to understand what's going on with the more and more cases you investigate.
Mm-hmm. And quickly, I just want to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. This month, my special guest is Tim Woolworth. And he is a lead investigator and case manager with Motor City Ghost Hunters. And obviously, we're talking about hunting those ghosts. Now, where do you go other than just homes and historical societies? Do you go to cemeteries as well, or where are these spirits at?
Spirits are everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
They're always around you. We can't see them. We can't hear them unless you're one of the very few lucky people who are sensitive. They're everywhere. If you want to sit down and do an investigation, you're going to find them. You can go to a cemetery, but if you have access to some of the grand historical buildings around here, you don't have time for cemeteries.
Mm-hmm.
With the Motor City Ghost Hunters, when we're in full season, which usually starts around spring and winds up around November, we can be out doing 2 to 3 houses a week, plus historical locations and businesses.
Mm-hmm. Well, every time you go to a site, generally, how long are you there for?
It depends on the site. If it's a multi-building site, we could be there from 8 o'clock at night till 4 in the morning. If it's a residential home, we typically want to be in and out in 4 hours or so.
Mm-hmm. Okay. This is not any of my business, but I mean, don't people have day jobs they have to go to, but they're willing to stay up till 4 o'clock to try to find spirits?
Yeah. Really? It's one of the fun parts, you know. That's why most of us who have steady day jobs, we don't prefer to go out on Friday nights, but Saturday nights, it's game on.
Mm-hmm. Right, so a lot of weekend activity?
A lot. Fridays and Saturdays are when we're very busy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also saw at your website that you also work with kids as well. You have tours with them. How does that work out?
That's wonderful. On our public hunts, we don't allow any people in under the age of 18. Because it's an uncontrolled environment, you have other adults, you don't know what's going to be said, what's going on, and we don't want to scare the kids. But paranormal phenomena, it is deeply ingrained in our culture right now. You can't turn two channels without seeing some kind of ghost show on television. Mm-hmm. And these kids are interested, and they have parents that are interested. So once a year, we do a kids' day. And we typically limit it to about 25 kids and their family. It's a daytime hunt in a place that we trust and we know the environment. And we show them the safe way to go out and ghost hunt without vandalizing things, with being respectful not only to the location but to whomever you're trying to communicate with, and show them that it's all fun. It's not all scary demons and possessions and everything.
Right. The ghosts are not necessarily out to get you, right?
Precisely. Because the propagation of fear is what you find on television these days.
Right. Right. Well, again, that sells. I'm sure that gets viewers. But obviously you want to introduce it in a way that, like you said, it's fun, it's interesting, and it won't necessarily scare the kids, right?
Precisely. Mm-hmm. Dealing with death is something that we have outsourced in our culture. We no longer have wakes in our living room. We make it cleanly. We put it off in another room. We don't deal with death at all anymore. But death is a big part of our life, and children are losing their grandparents, siblings, parents, and they want to know what's on the other side. Mm-hmm. And when they're dealing with us, you know, on kids' days, typically ages like 9 to 17, 18 years old, they're smart enough to ask questions and want to figure things out for themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's great, just to help alleviate that fear. I mean, I don't know if you had this when you first started, when you thought you were experiencing spirit and ghosts. Were you frightened initially when you first started?
Initially, no. My first experience dealing directly with ghosts is when I did a house cleansing for a friend in the year 2000. And it just felt natural to me. I grew up two blocks from a historical fort in New York. It was my playground. And when I was lucky enough to actually get to ghost hunt this particular place, they knew me by name. Because I played there as a kid.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you had something in common, right?
Yeah.
It's amazing, right?
It is.
Now, how many spirits were there approximately?
Well, there were four that we constantly had contact with. But using the ghost box one night, we found out that there were dozens.
Mm-hmm. Now, what is a ghost box?
A ghost box is a very unique device that's only been around since 2002. It allows for real-time communication with the other side. You can ask questions and receive answers in real time.
Mm-hmm. And they usually work pretty good?
For some people. For others, they can't make any sense, heads or tails of it. Myself, luckily, I got into ghost boxing at a very good time when a lot of the original ghost box builders were still around. You could still pick up these boxes for very cheap because no one knew what they were. But now there's ghost boxes that are available from any paranormal hobby store for like $70 that don't sound nearly as good, but they get the job done. So those of us who were in it early on and got some of the best boxes out there, we can get crystal clear sentences, clear as day, coming through for responses, where Joe Hobbyist will pick up a box and you'll get one or two words.
Mm-hmm. So you don't make your own boxes per se, you purchase them. There are other companies that make these boxes?
There's one company now and a second one right around the corner that are mass producing these boxes for $200 and less. And then there are boutique boxes, known as Frank's boxes, Joe's boxes, mini boxes. Those are all boxes that were original that are no longer made because all the three people who made those three types of boxes have all passed on. There are a couple people who've picked up the gauntlet, like Andrew Openlander in Chicago, and Andre Willert in Texas, and a couple others. So they are still being made. There are boutique boxes, but these are things that, you know, they take time to create, and they're very rare.
Mm-hmm. What other kind of equipment do you use?
Well, we use EMF detectors. We use voice recorders, of course. Motion detectors. We have air particle analyzers. We have CSI, UV lights, we have everything under the sun. When we bring our gear boxes, we typically wind up with about 12 to 15 boxes just full of gear when mm-hmm. we go to an investigation. But the most important thing is a pen and paper and your own five senses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that helps, right?
Yeah.
The simple stuff sometimes. Well, this equipment sounds very expensive, is it?
It is. You can start out for very cheap with a little voice recorder for $50, but you get what you pay for. And, you understand recording here, and if you get something that's recording MP3 versus a 24-bit recorder, there's a huge difference. So basically, it's all about scaling. How much do you want to spend? How much do you want to put into it? And unfortunately, there are a lot of manufacturers that prey upon the gullible by repurposing gear for paranormal purposes with no idea what it's doing or why it's detecting, but it's sold as paranormal. You can put a flashing light on anything today and call it ghost this, ghost that, and people will buy
it. Right. It looks good and say, yeah, I'll take that. But how do you raise the money to get all this equipment?
You have to scrimp and save. With our particular group, we never charge a dime. Everything we do is free. Residential investigations, historical societies, businesses, we never charge. We don't even accept money for gas. So every
wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. I mean, I'm impressed.
Yeah. Every investigator has to buy their own gear. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's what you can afford. And luckily, we have a lot of people in our group if you've been to the site. So amongst the whole, we have a lot of gear out there. And if we have three people going out to a home that don't have enough gear, we'll loan out, myself or John or Jason or any of the other people in the group will loan gear out.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, if I were to give you a donation or something, you wouldn't accept it or you couldn't accept it?
We'd tell you to give it to a historical society.
Wow. Yeah, again, that's pretty amazing. Again, everybody's, looking for help. And obviously, if you're a nonprofit organization, you have to depend on others usually to help you out with donations or whatever the case. Mm-hmm. But that's great that you're self-motivated and you can afford the stuff and get it out there.
Yeah, and our reward is, those questions we all have. We're trying to figure it out. And when you're into this, you get to go into locations that are purportedly haunted and try to figure it out for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a lot of equipment yourself?
I do. When I got into this, I was one of the guys who would try everything out to know whether I wanted to use it or not. And I collected two cases worth of gear, and now I bring like four things with me and the rest of the gear sits.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a workout, too, if you bring a lot of equipment as well? Or
it is. Sometimes we have dollies.
Yeah. Well, again, some of these older homes, you're going up and down a lot of stairs, too, mm-hmm. I'd imagine. So, it's great for your exercise, but it's one of the side benefits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, when you go into a house, how do you start? What's the first thing you usually do?
Sit down and talk to the client. The client's going to walk you through the house, every room where they've experienced things. When we first deal with a client intake, we call them up, we ask them questions, and we typically ask them to keep a log. If the events are going on, what time's it going on, what location were you at, what were you doing, and we'll go over the log and where it happened in the particular home. The next step is to go through and take like baseline EMFs. We've run into cases where people are feeling paranoid. We ran into one case with a little girl who was being rushed to the hospital consistently because her head was ringing, she couldn't breathe, all of this stuff. We found out it was EMF in her home. And we removed the source of EMF, and she was fine afterwards.
Mm-hmm. EMF is what? I don't mean to.
Oh, not a problem. It's the electromagnetic field. And okay. It can be free-floating AC in the air, magnetism in the air. A lot of the times it comes from something simple like an ungrounded phone line. And you can be sitting in a room full of AC, of EMF, and not even know it. But when you're in there, you can feel pressure on your chest. You can get headaches, ringing in your ears, see shadows. These are all cases of EMF when you're constantly subject to it. When we go into businesses, it's quite frequently because you have electrical conduits and electrical boxes that carry a lot of EMF, and sometimes your cash register is right next to an electrical conduit. So the person who's there says, I see shadows over there, I'm hearing knocks over there. A lot of times it's just basic EMF.
Mm-hmm. And how do you eradicate that?
We can't. We're not electricians or anything.
Okay.
But what we can do is we can find the source of it, see mm-hmm. where it's radiating from. We also have thermal guns that will read thermal temperatures. So you can scan a wall and get a thermal reading. and see that a light switch could be burning really, really hot. So you know there's something wrong with the electrical in it. There's a lot of things that we source out when we go into these houses. And luckily, the man who started this particular group, John McCormick, he is a licensed contractor by trade. So he's very good at sourcing this stuff out.
Mm-hmm. Again, I just want to remind everybody, in case you just joined us, that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. You're listening to Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest is Tim Woolworth. He is a lead investigator and case manager with Motor City Ghost Hunters. Now, when you go into a house, do you find that people are usually freaked out and really want you there and want you to discover what the problem is?
Most of the time, we go into a house and the people who called us in have good intentions. There are other times we'll go into a house where we are set up for their Saturday night entertainment. And that does happen. There's nothing worse than traveling an hour to go to a house and you knock on the door and the resident answers the door drunk. And it does happen.
Right.
But most of the houses we go into, there are people who call us up who are absolutely scared because their child saw something. They're hearing footsteps. Mm-hmm. All the typical things that are associated with a haunting. And most of the time, it's not an emergency situation. But if the family feels threatened, we'll drop everything we can do. And if we can get there on a Tuesday night, we will.
Mm-hmm. So people have reported things like, I guess, experiencing some discomfort or being attacked by these spirits, anything like that?
Oh, we get a lot of cases where people say that they've been pushed, objects are levitating, stuff like that, yes.
Mm-hmm. So people actually have been hurt sometimes?
Those are the claims that come in sometimes, yes.
Mm-hmm. Have you experienced that at all?
Myself, no. I have witnessed a very good friend get pushed over at an investigation, and I've seen other people get scratched, but nothing too serious. Most of the cases that you go into, 98% of the time, there's nothing going on regarding evil intention whatsoever. Mm-hmm. But there are spirits that, well, as in life, so in death, you do have jerks who have died, right. Mm-hmm. And they're over there.
Yeah, right. Sometimes they are all around. You can't get rid of them. But so nothing has really come up and tapped you on the shoulder or anything like that? You've never experienced that per se or felt like there's some type of entity trying to grab you or hold you?
Oh, I've been touched numerous times.
Oh, okay.
One of my favorite examples, I was down in Gettysburg. Oh, must have been 2010, 2009. I can't remember which year I was down there. I go down annually. And I was at a little place called Sachs Bridge. It was March. It was really cold. It was like 28 degrees out at night. The bridge is over open water, so it's very chill. When you pull up to Sachs Bridge, the bridge is on your left, and there's a cornfield to your right. We were doing our investigation on the bridge, and purportedly that's where a man was hung, and it was also a ground they had to keep between the Union and Confederates to keep Confederates from going across the bridge. And we went to the car to warm up. So I'm sitting in my car, and there's a tree right to the right by the passenger side headlight, and I see a shadow go in front of the tree. And my partner, who was sitting on the seat, he looked at me and said, "You see that?" I'm like, "Yeah, I saw that." And I saw two of them dart right in front of my headlights on the front. I looked in the rearview mirror. There was one behind me. At the same time, a friend who was coming up to the investigation, because she was at a conference during the day, was coming up to the investigation behind us, and going up the road, she starts beeping on the horn as hard as she can, pulls up right behind me, comes out, knocks on my window. I pull it down. She said, "You see all the shadow people surrounding your car?" So not only did we witness it in the car, she witnessed it behind us. Mm-hmm. Another great example was at Fort Wayne here locally. We're in the jail, and I'm sitting there with two persons. We're doing a ghost box session, and then all of a sudden I see a shadow at the window, because we're inside, the door is closed. I see a shadow at the window, and then rap, rap, rap on the door so loud, and we caught it on video. One of the people, I was incredulous. I thought somebody was out there screwing with us, knocking on the window. So one of my partners went out, opened the door, looked. There was no one there.
Mm-hmm. So who can explain that, right?
You can't, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, has there ever been a time when you've really been kind of freaked out by what's going on and that, you know, you want to leave whatever place you're at? Has that ever been your experience?
It's happened a couple times. Before I learned how to protect myself, it happened a couple times. There was one time I was in the basement of a theater, and I don't know if it was they were trying to get to me empathetically or what, but my chest was so constricted I couldn't even breathe. I had to go outside. There was another time I was in Gettysburg down in the basement of a house of a bed and breakfast. It was right on the Mason-Dixon line. They had slaves. They chained them to the wall every night because there were 10 steps to freedom. And that particular basement has actually had exorcisms done over it. And there was a black mass that completely enveloped me. And that freaked me out a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would. Now, do you often go to Civil War sites, battlefields, to experience any spirits?
Absolutely. They gave all when they died. And mm-hmm. sometimes we can go and we can give them closure, help them cross over. Mm-hmm. And we go to pay respect. It's mm-hmm. a big part of it. You're dealing with conscious intent. You're dealing with soldiers who were there. And they were doing what they believed was right. And even if you can't help them, you can pay respect to them by talking to them.
Right.
Letting them know that we're still there for them.
Right. So you actually do help the spirits cross over and, I don't know, make amends or whatever they have to do while they're still here, but they feel a little more comfortable and that they can go over and cross over to the other side?
Yeah. To say that we cross them over is kind of mislabeling it. It's a conscious decision that they have to make on their own. Mm-hmm. And for a long time before I got into serious ghost boxing, I used to do it off of instinct. You would talk to, if you go into a location and there's a child, let's say, who's waiting for their mother, and you get a lot of EVPs where they're crying out for mama, mama, stuff like that. And you have to, you know, kind of talk them into it, saying, you know, you have to go into the light. I work with techs. Some people call them guardian angels. Some people call them spirit guides. They've identified themselves as technicians. And when you communicate with the other side, you're opening up a bridge to the other side. You're like a beacon because mm-hmm. they know you're talking to them and they come from all around. And the techs are there at the same time to help them across. So I always tell them, you know, in the light, you're going to find love, you're going to find understanding, family, mm-hmm. it's right. the natural progression, all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then to find Tom, who is my main tech, find him, hold his hand, he'll bring you into the light. For years, I used to do that without the tech part, saying, you know, all the love and understanding and all of that. Then in March of 2010, I recorded a session that completely blew my mind. I was talking with a child. He said he's been lost. He'd been there far too long. This was on a ghost box. And then I did my crossing over with the light stuff, and I said, do you see a light? And I heard a voice on the other side saying, a light, which was my tech talking to them. And then this little kid said, the lights are everywhere. And I said, well, they're surrounding me, my spirit guides. I didn't know they were techs then. Grab their hand, they'll bring you across. And then they left. It was real-time audio of them crossing over into the light, and I've recorded that dozens of times since.
Mm-hmm. So, in essence, you do help them a little bit anyway.
We absolutely try. Mm-hmm. I equate it to if I was walking down the street and I heard someone screaming help from a two-story window. I'm not going to walk by. I'm mm-hmm. going to do something. And if I'm sitting down at a location and I've got a box on and I hear help, 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 I'm going to do what I can to help.
Mm-hmm. Now, have you ever run into a ghost or a spirit that just refuses to leave? They're not going anywhere, and they tell you that?
Of course. And that's part of their conscious decision. There's nothing you can do but, you know, try to reassure.
Mm-hmm. And if they do make up their mind that they're not leaving, that's what happens? I mean, there's not anything that would just draw them to the light or have some kind of, you know, tech is what you called it. Spirit entity come over and take them to the light?
I think it's something that's the natural progression for all of us, and it's a decision we have to make on our own. I personally think that everybody eventually goes into the light, and that's why nobody's out there claiming to have recorded Aristotle, for example.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think it's interesting, too, you touched upon this, the fact that everybody experiences the same thing, whether they use different words to describe it, the sensation, the journey, whatever, but it's all the same. And I think that's interesting because you seem to understand that, yes, there is a better place and that you should just let go and let God, so to speak.
Yeah, myself, actually, I don't believe in a God. I'm a spiritual atheist.
Okay. Really?
Yeah. All right.
Now, why is that? I mean, is there any particular reason?
Well, I can't believe in one particular Godhead. I think that our understanding of the other side is minimal at best. I think.
Oh, yeah.
I think
we
are all part of a generalized source, and you know, our spirit realm that we all go back to, that source, that is God. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's, you know, just one figure in a flowing white robe saying do this, do that, do this.
Yeah, or that he's male necessarily.
Precisely.
Or, you know, whatever, you know, vibration they send out, whatever, you know, female or male, you know, it's different entities up there.
Well, yeah, I believe that we have texts, we have individuals who fully believe in reincarnation. I think there are people who've done their time, and there are people who want to come back and keep working on a problem over and over again until they get it right.
Right. Well, then that's what I've been led to believe, that, you know, we have lessons to learn, and if you don't learn it the first time, you're going to come back and, you know, hopefully learn it the next time, or new lessons too. I mean, each lifetime, hopefully you progress and you become a better person, a better soul as you come back and live life again. That's been my understanding of it, and that's what you think as well?
Yeah, I think that's my understanding. One of the craziest things I recorded through a ghost box was actually about 6 months or so ago. I was using a Frank's box during a session, and it says, "Hi, Tim, we know a fella used to be you."
Oh, really?
Yeah, I don't know if they're talking about a previous incarnation of me or what, but that still is running around in my mind. And about 4 years ago, I recorded, "Tim, there are two of you." So, yeah.
Yeah. You mean there are two different Tims? Is that what they were trying to imply, or not sure?
I think they were trying to imply of the physical self and the spirit self,
mm-hmm.
you know, to exist in things. It's the whole dichotomy of what is the brain and what is the mind.
Right. Right. Well, again, I've heard there could be different planes and different spirits are on different planes. In essence, they're still you, but it might be a whole different ball game on each plane. Hard to say. Again, there are so many theories, and like you said, who really knows the truth? I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's one thing to hear about something, but until you actually experience it, you'll never really know.
And that's the truth. One of the things that I always say is there are no experts. But there are those with more experience. Anybody who proclaims to be an expert in anything paranormal, run away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. Just ignore them, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you go to the different homes, do you ever get to the feeling that people don't want you there, or they resent the fact you're there? Or do you just go to places where they're only accepting of you and your group?
Well, when we go into places, we go there when it's a time of need. And sometimes we go into houses where it's a mixed response, where you may have one spouse that wants you to be there and the other one does not want you to be there, whether it be a religious belief or whether it's just a disagreement with what's going on at the house. So there are certain bridges that you have to cross at certain locations. And we read each situation differently.
Mm-hmm.
If we're coming up against opposition from somebody, we may ask them, you know, if the wife, let's say, believes that there's activity at the house, but the husband is vehemently against it, we'll sometimes ask if the husband wants to take the kids out for ice cream or something while we're investigating.
Right, or maybe come back at another time when he or she, whoever is having the problem mm-hmm. with it, won't be around.
Yeah, precisely.
Mm-hmm.
And when we go into houses, we try to keep things down. So if there are kids, they have to be silent and not running around playing, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Any pets can't be at the location because it will contaminate evidence entirely.
Right.
And you can't trust what you get
mm-hmm.
if you have animals.
Right. Well, also something you said earlier is the fact that, you know, you just have to go in there and trust what you're getting and that you have the equipment, that it should be correct. But again, there's no guarantees and there's nothing to really say that what they're telling you is definitive. Is that correct?
Precisely. The equipment that we used some of it is purpose-built and some of it is repurposed. There are certain things like EMF detectors. We touched on EMF earlier, mm-hmm. where there are a lot of groups out there who use AC EMF detectors for spirit detectors. And that is exceptionally problematic because AC is it's man-made. It's mm-hmm. man-made electricity. There's right. nothing natural about it whatsoever. So we'll go out with like DC detectors and AC detectors. AC to see if you have free-floating EMF in the room, and DC to see if you can capture a possible spirit energy, because DC is the body electric. It's the electricity that fires between our neurons and makes everything happen. So we'll use a wide array of EMF detectors, and you might get an anomaly on an EMF detector, and you'll say, oh, that's kind of neat, and you try to get it to reproduce that anomaly. The problem is an EMF detector, they're hoping they're going to get something, but you don't know where the source came from. You don't know where the source is traveling to, and you don't know the frequency that triggered it. So people who work with just one piece of gear, like an EMF detector, they're not getting the full picture, and they never will. So you have to work with all types of different gear. Voice recorders are probably the best thing you can have, because EVP has been recorded since 1959. It's tried and true for the most part. They've tried to debunk it several times in laboratories. They work in Faraday cages, so you know there's no outside radio stray signals, anything like that. So EVP is kind of tried and true in our field, and video cameras, because you want to be able to map out a location and see what is going on in the room. Because if you get an EVP that where you think it says hi, it could just be Johnny in the corner going, mm-hmm. and you won't know that unless you had a video recorder to capture it.
Right. Now, when you go to these places, do you ever get frustrated that nothing's really happening? You might be there for hours and nothing seems to happen. Do you get frustrated sometimes?
I don't get frustrated. When I was younger and more green at this, I was a little frustrated because you want some instant gratification.
Right.
But over time, you start to realize that your best evidence is when you're sitting down in a room and talking with somebody, and you go home and listen to it, and then there's a voice that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. saying hi or giving you a name or something like that. And that's once you've experienced that a few dozen times, you realize you can sit down for 4 hours in a room and just do your thing. But the best part about it is you don't really get frustrated because the people that you're out with, you enjoy. So it's mm-hmm. like sitting down in a room with four friends doing a mutual hobby.
Right. So it's not like you're just getting totally bored or frustrated because you have others with you.
Correct. There are those who are seeking instant gratification in newer groups who will lend themselves to like provocation, mm-hmm. where they will challenge whatever spirit is there, and
right.
you know, they approach it with no respect.
Right. Or also they might look a little too closely into it and think that they're hearing things that really aren't there, or seeing things that aren't really there, but they want something to happen so badly that in essence their imagination takes over and they'll come up with something, right?
Exactly. And for some reason there are so many people who come in and out of these groups where they feel that they're sensitive in some way, and they try to steer an investigation all around their senses versus the equipment and the tried and true techniques that we're using in the room. And those people always find their way out of the group for the most part. It's a dynamic and it's fluid. It's mm-hmm. constantly moving, and every situation, every investigation is different.
Mm-hmm. So one person in your particular group, the Motor City Ghost Hunters, if they were to join, they couldn't just come in there and let their ego take over and I'm going to control the situation or whatever. They would have to let the situation come to you or to the group.
Yeah, if somebody comes in with no experience and they start calling all the shots, that doesn't work. There's a lot to learn. There's a lot to learn about technique and approaching the other side respectfully, and how to elicit responses via EVP and other mechanisms versus just going in and rattling off questions left and right and trying to control a situation. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. It can't work that way. You won't get results.
Mm-hmm. Again, I just want to take time out to remind everybody that this is WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Tim Woolworth. He is a lead investigator and case manager with Motor City Ghost Hunters. Now, here's something I wanted to ask. When you go into a house, do you ever get the feeling that you shouldn't be there? I mean, there's some kind of sign that maybe they, the spirits or whoever, want to get rid of you or they don't want you there?
Sometimes, yeah. You can come across grumpy spirits.
Yeah, all types of spirits, I'd imagine.
Yeah, you know, if you start to feel that way, or you have a sensitive in the group is starting to feel that way, you ask a couple questions and see what kind of responses you get. You know, if you want us to leave, knock three times, stuff like that.
And you respect that? If you hear a knock three times, you don't.
If you hear a knock three times, you're absolutely floored, and you respect it, and you leave.
Right, right. Well, obviously, it's listening, so it would respond in that way, so obviously that's telling you something.
Precisely.
Right.
You are dealing with a conscious intent. We treat whatever entities we're dealing with. Some people call them spirits, others ghosts. I personally call them the others, because we simply do not know what they are. Mm-hmm. But you're dealing with conscious intent, and you want to treat that person, that spirit, that soul, whatever it is, like you were talking to someone across the room, like you and I. Mm-hmm. You never go in and you don't be bossy. You say please, you say thank you. You ask questions, you try to establish a rapport. It's a whole process.
Mm-hmm. You try to treat them like you would be treated type of situation?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. With respect, if nothing else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you get an emergency call, do you go right over to that place? I mean, or do you say, well, we'll get there when we can? How does that work?
It's case dependent. Sometimes you get a call and unfortunately, due to scheduling, due to work, all this stuff, we can't make it. Mm-hmm. And it happens infrequently, but it does happen. So at that point, luckily, our group has a rapport that resonates throughout all of southeastern Michigan, and we get calls as far away as Lake Orion, even Traverse City, all across the state. So we have a network, mainly thanks to one of our team members, and he's a case manager, Jason Schrock. He has networked with all these groups all over Michigan. So if we can't handle a case, we'll farm it out to people we'd like and respect.
Mm-hmm. And vice versa, they contact you if it's something in this area?
Precisely.
Mm-hmm. So how does that work? I mean, is that network work pretty well, and is that all over the state or all over the nation, or where are they at?
Well, they're luckily here in Michigan. It's a smaller state, so a lot of the groups, we know each other, we know what they do, we meet up at conferences, things like that. Luckily, there's networking all over the country, mainly through social media these days. Mm-hmm. And we all keep abreast of each other, so we don't get a lot of calls for stuff out of state, but if we do, we can find a way to place it.
Mm-hmm. Right. So even if it were something, again, in California, there's groups out there that would take care of something like that. If there was a relative here in Michigan that was concerned about something out in California, you could contact somebody there?
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, occasionally, like a couple months ago, I had a request from Illinois. And Illinois is quite a drive from Ann Arbor.
Yeah, right, so. Right, yeah. Again, like you said, you've got real life and you've got jobs and, you know,
exactly,
things to take care of, so you can't just pack it all in and take off. You know?
Especially when you have to deal with gas and hotels and stuff like that, so it's not always feasible.
Right. But I'd imagine sometimes in those emergency situations, aren't people in a panic?
They are in a panic, an absolute panic. If you have a child saying they see something in the corner and it scares them and it pushed them down the stairs, yeah, there's panic involved.
Right. Well, what do you tell those people then if you can't get there right away and maybe somebody else can't get there real soon and they're just totally upset and freaked out that, oh my God, I don't know what's going to happen? What do you tell them?
It's hard. It really is. They're living, typically when they call us and they've been going through activity, they're at the end of their rope, but they've lived with the activity for a period up until that particular point. Very, very rarely, if ever, is there ever a case where, you know, there's just activity out of the blue and it's freaking them out. It's something that they've lived with and it's gradually grown and grown. So if they're in that panic state, they will find a way to continue to stay there till someone can find them or they can go to relatives or whatever is necessary. We do have somebody who is trained in psychology on the group, so she's very good at talking to people in these particular situations.
do you normally refer them to her just to give them some kind of comfort?
Yeah, she is one of our main profilers. So mm-hmm. she's the one who will go in and ask a lot of questions, and she's very good at her job.
Mm-hmm. Now, do the members of your group all come from different walks of life, but their one obvious thing that they have in common is they're interested in ghost hunting?
Correct. We have everything from real estate agents to web designers, contractors, nurses, union reps. We have the full gamut.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine they all have their different ways of how they got attracted to hunting for ghosts, correct? They all have their own stories?
Oh, of course, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nobody just up and says, I want to be a ghost hunter. Typically, it's, you know, you experience something as a kid, you've seen an apparition, you've been touched, and you want to figure out more.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, again, too, from some of the accounts that I've seen at your website, people have said that they've just felt something as simple as maybe water dripping on them or mm-hmm. something like that. It may not actually be dripping water, but when people experience things like that, what does that indicate, do you think?
Well, it's situation dependent. So when we go into a place, like we did one home where they said that they had puddles that would just appear on the floor and then disappear. And we ran every test, and we couldn't find any evidence of that whatsoever. So it's really hard in those situations. You can't really call somebody crazy. You can't call them a liar.
Well, you could, but yeah. they wouldn't like it.
Yeah, just because you didn't witness it doesn't mean right. it doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. In that particular situation, they also had a dog bowl in the kitchen, and there was a slant to the floor, but that's a different story.
Mm-hmm. Right. But again, if the spirits know you're there, they may decide not to come out and not to say anything just because they don't want you there or they don't want to contact you or anybody else. Has that been the case at times? Or do you think that it is?
It may be the case at times, but typically when a spirit is trying to communicate, they are trying to get a message across. And mm-hmm. If you're yelling at somebody who's walking down the street and they don't hear you, you get frustrated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happens with a ghost. They're in a house. They're trying to communicate. They're knocking. They're rapping. They're moving things. Mm-hmm. And people aren't hearing them. So they bring in people, ghost hunters as they're called, to come in and try to talk to them. And we explain to them, we have these devices. This thing does this. This thing does this. This will capture your voice. We might see you with this. And we try to find a piece of gear that will work with them in that particular situation. Mm-hmm. And if a ghost is trying to communicate with a family and someone comes in and says, I'm here to talk to you, chances are they're going to talk.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. You would think that obviously makes sense if they're moving things or knocking on things. They are trying to get somebody's attention.
Mm-hmm. And most of the time, it's grandpa. We went into a house where this lady was just terrified. Her husband is a salesperson. He goes all across the country. She's left there alone. And there was just a rap, rap, rap on the wall at night. And she was just beyond her wit's end, absolutely terrified. And she showed us where the rap was. It was from the garage door going into the house. So we did our sessions. We ran through everything. It was just a quick walkthrough. And started listening back, went home, listened to the evidence, and we got her grandfather's name. We didn't know her grandfather's name. We didn't know the backstory at all. So I went in, played the evidence for her, and she said, that's my grandfather. He raised me. Basically raised her from a little girl until she went off to college. And his voice came through, his name came through, and the rapping that was happening was his prized golf clubs. They were mm-hmm. on the wall next to the door in the garage.
Mm-hmm. And what did he want?
He just wanted to be recognized, so they took the golf clubs and mounted them properly over the mantle. Mm-hmm. She addressed the situation. She now talks to her grandfather because she knows he's there with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it's no problem. It's the main thing we have to do is let the people know, one, what is there if we can, and two, how to interact with them. And three, if it's family, they're going to more than likely say, yeah, let's work with them. How do I deal with it? How do I address them? If it isn't family and it's somebody they don't want there, then we have to try to talk whoever's there into going away.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, again, what if they don't want to leave and you can't talk them into it? You just throw up your hands and say, well, okay, we're out of here.
That's it. That's basically what you have to do. You can go back time and time again and try to reconvince these people, but you can't force someone to move. And, you know, there are people who say, oh, I'm cleansing this house. I've got my sage, I've got my abalone shell and my feather, and I'm going to go through and do a spiritual cleansing. That's great. It relieves bad energies.
Good luck with that, right?
Yeah, it's not going to push anyone out. Mm-hmm. If they don't want to leave, they don't want to leave. And that's where you try to convince them to leave. Talk to them about the light, about crossing over. Talk to them about how they're making the family feel, things like that. Mm-hmm. Most of the times, the situations will resolve themselves. And sometimes there will be a lull in the situation where there will be no activity for 6 months, a year, 2 years. Then it comes back. You never know.
Mm-hmm. Well, there again, too, I mean, once the spirit has been satisfied that the situation is taken care of that has been upsetting them, then they feel they can go towards the light and leave the earth plane?
In my experience, yes, but there is another facet to it. You can go, they can cross over to the other side, but there's nothing saying they can't come back to check on things.
Mm-hmm. So that does happen as well?
Quite frequently, and that's when you find grandma and grandpa. They want to make sure that their progeny's doing okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, now how could somebody get in touch with your organization if they wanted to?
Well, MotorCityGhostHunters.com is the most direct way. There are investigation request forms. There's contact emails. There's even a phone number there to contact us directly. And we also monitor our social media accounts quite frequently. So if you contact us through Facebook, that's another way to do it.
Mm-hmm. Any special events coming up?
We do. We have several public events, once again, for historical societies. This year we've got Flat Rock, we've got Dearborn, we have Port Huron, which is the only one scheduled at this point with a set date of October 24th, and we have a new one in Charlotte this year. We have three other historical societies that are on the fence.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean by on the fence? They don't know if they're going to have it or not?
Correct. Sometimes when you do these things, you have to deal with boards. So you'll have some board members that are on, some board members that aren't. So it requires a little bit of lobbying.
Right. Well, again, it's just like a couple that, you know, the husband doesn't want you there, but the wife does. It just depends on each group.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Do they realize they can make money with you guys there?
That's the big selling point, yeah.
Uh-huh. Right. Now, you kind of alluded to, you know, being called a ghost hunter, is there another term that you prefer?
Ghost hunter is tough, but, you know, psychical researcher. It's what it was originally dubbed back with the Society for Psychical Research in the late 19th century. The term ghost hunter didn't come around until the 1920s with the first quote-unquote ghost hunter by the name of Harry Price. Mm-hmm. And he published Confessions of a Ghost Hunter, and the name just stuck.
Oh, okay. Well, and you've learned to live with it, right?
Pretty much, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Tim. I appreciate you being here, and very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me, Mike.
Once again, I would just like to thank my special guest for this month, Tim Woolworth. He is a lead investigator and case manager with Motor City Ghost Hunters. Fascinating, fascinating. I mean, you really never know when you might come across a spirit, what the circumstances might be. And again, interesting, especially when they can help homeowners or historical societies or whatever in their quest for getting rid of ghosts or maybe understanding the situation a little bit better. I guess it all helps and helps everybody. And I would also like to thank my producer, Mark Hall, who helped me out for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I do appreciate his help. And right now, I would like to announce that WHFR and Metaphysically Speaking will be presenting our 7th annual, that's right, 7th annual Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair on Saturday, March 21st, 2015, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. in the Henry Ford College Student and Culinary Arts Center. If you would be interested in joining us as a vendor, reader, or body healer for this special holistic event, all you have to do is contact us by calling 313-483-2555 or 313-605-4206. You can also email us at holistic2010@peoplepc.com. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you there at the fair. That's going to do it for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. I hope you come back next month on the third Tuesday of each month. You can hear another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. With that being said, thank you for listening and have a great day, everybody.
WHFR Dearborn.
Thank you for tuning in to WHFR Dearborn, Henry Ford College's own broadcast and internet station, and we are grateful that you're here listening to this beautiful classical programming. If you'd like to check out some other options, some variety in our programming day, we encourage you to go to our WHFR website. It is as simple as typing in WHFR.FM. That's right, WHFR.FM into your web browser. You will be automatically whisked into the magical world of the WHFR website. And what can you find here? Well, schedule of programs, special upcoming events, lists of the last several songs played, as well as archives of our live music shows and our multitude of talk shows. It's very informative and very interactive. You'll also see photo galleries, ways to contact us, and so much more. It's WHFR.FM, our website. Check it out.
Here's some old English music for an ensemble of instruments that was known as the Consort of Viols.